The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brad McDonald, and I'll be your host for the Trumpet Daily radio program today. This morning, I thought we could talk about a story that has sort of slipped through the cracks over the past few weeks. It's been lost amid the crisis in Greece, the nuclear deal between the United States and Iran, the Planned Parenthood scandal that's erupting in the United States, and of course, all the hoopla surrounding the tragic demise of Cecil the Lion. Before we get into the subject today, I thought I might just mention that we shouldn't get used to not seeing Greece in the news. Greece is going to return to the news again over the next week or two or three. Just this week, the International Monetary Fund indicated that it would not be able to participate in a third bailout of Greece. And this could have huge ramifications for for Greece's place in the Eurozone and Greece's place in the European Union. If the IMF doesn't give money to Greece, if the IMF doesn't want to participate in a bailout, then Germany probably won't be able to give money to Greece, because Germany, by law, can only give money or can only help Greece with a bailout if the International Monetary Fund is contributing. So the IMF's announcement on Wednesday that it may not be able to participate in another bailout could really be another huge destabilizing factor in Europe. And then, of course, in Greece, Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras is madly trying to hold his party together. He's facing a mutiny as a number of politicians in his party, Syriza, the left-wing political party there in Greece, a number of politicians are threatening to leave the party because they're unhappy with the bailout conditions that the Prime Minister agreed to with his masters in Germany and the EU. So the crisis in Greece continues to fester. And here, pretty soon, over the next week or two, sometime in August, I think they have to agree to this third bailout by August 20th. So as we approach that date, expect to see Greece in the news again, and who knows how it will turn out this time. Will Greece leave the Eurozone? Will Greece leave the European Union? Well, we'll just have to wait and find out. Now, what I'd like to talk about today doesn't seem as dramatic or as exciting as Germany's financial conquering of Greece, or it doesn't seem as dramatic as the game-changing nuclear deal that was signed recently between Iran and the United States. But the events we're going to talk about, they are significant. And they really are pretty dramatic and even exciting, especially when we consider them, and especially when we consider the way that they fulfill Bible prophecy. Today, I'd like to talk about the slowly deteriorating relationship between Hamas and Iran, and Hamas's improving relationship with Iran's regional opponent, that is Saudi Arabia. Hamas, of course, is the Sunni terrorist organization that inhabits and controls the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip is that little slice of territory between the Mediterranean Sea and Israel, with a border. Its southern border is with Egypt. Hamas is the terrorist organization that for years, almost every summer it seems, wages war on Israel. And it has a penchant for launching missiles at towns and cities in Israel. Now, what we're seeing in this relationship between Iran and Hamas really is pretty remarkable. Hamas has been firmly in Iran's camp for more than 20 years now. Iran is Hamas's primary financial backer. Iran trains Hamas terrorists. Iran arms Hamas terrorists. Hamas looks to Iran for tactical guidance and help and assistance. Hamas is financed by Iran to the tune of tens of millions of dollars every year. These two have been close. The benefit for Iran, of course, is that in Hamas it has an ally right on the doorstep of Israel, its greatest enemy. Hamas is a major instrument of Iran's foreign policy. Together with Bashar al-Assad in Syria and the Hezbollah terrorist group in Lebanon, Hamas gives Iran the means of projecting power in the Levant, in that area, in that territory. And it gives Iran the means, and it gives Iran the ability to threaten the Jewish state. Hamas is important to Iran. And this relationship, as I mentioned, this relationship has been fairly strong for the past 10 or 20 years. And now this strategic alliance appears to be breaking. Before we explore some of the recent developments between Iran and Hamas, I thought I might just read what The Trumpet wrote about this relationship a few years ago. This is what Trumpet editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Furry, this is what he wrote in the September 2012 Trumpet. And this article, and you can read this article, you can read this article online, but in this article, he was explaining a prophecy in the book of Psalms. And I mean, that's interesting. If you know much about the Bible, you know that Psalms isn't generally known as a book with much prophecy about end time events. But there is a prophecy in the book of Psalms, of all books, that talks about end time events, and that talks specifically about events that we're currently seeing unfold in the Middle East. Now, we'll look into this prophecy in more detail in a moment. But this prophecy is essentially about, the coalition of the moderate, mainly Sunni Arab states in the Middle East. And this psalm, this prophecy in the book of Psalms says that this confederate of nations will form an alliance with Germany. But now listen to what Mr. Flurry wrote about this prophecy 3 years ago, 4 years ago. This is what Mr. Flurry wrote. This prophecy in Psalm 83 reveals a tremendous amount about what we can expect to see in the time ahead, including some dramatic changes. Gebal, modern-day Lebanon, is home today to the Iranian terrorist puppet Hezbollah. We can expect it to switch alliance. This prophecy also reveals that the Philistines are with the inhabitants of Tyre. Get a map out and you will see that Tyre is in southern Lebanon, the stronghold of the Hezbollah terrorists. Their alliance with Iran is about to be broken, and Germany will be the main cause. The Philistines, or the Palestinians of Gaza, and even those in the West Bank, are going to shift their alliance to Germany as well. Iran has recently led Hezbollah and the Palestinians in their terrorist activities. They all share common enemies, especially America and Israel. But they have some different views in religion and politics, which could cause Hezbollah and the Palestinians to ally themselves with Germany. There may soon be some significant power shifts in Lebanon and Gaza. So here was Mr. Flurry in 2012 forecasting that there would be a split in the relationship between Iran and Hamas, and that there would be a split in the relationship between Iran and Hezbollah. This was more than he wrote this more than 3 years ago. Now, at the time, when he wrote this, there was very little evidence of any of this happening. It didn't even look like a remote possibility. Iran was giving Hamas millions of dollars each year. Iran was sending Hamas boatloads of weapons. They were being smuggled into Hamas via the tunnels on the border between Egypt and Gaza. Iran was, last summer, when Hamas engaged in its missile assault on Israel. It was Iran supported that assault. I mean, in 2012, there was hardly any evidence of a split, of a divorce between Hamas and Iran. Yet here was the trumpet making this dramatic forecast and really making a forecast that at the time seemed pretty outlandish. Here was Mr. Flurry was forecasting a split in the relationship between Iran, Hamas, and forecasting that Hamas, or the Palestinians in Gaza, would begin to align themselves with the nations of this Psalm 83 alliance, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Germany. That was 3 years ago. And again, there wasn't a lot of evidence to support that forecast. But let's now take a look at what's happening today. I'll just read a few quotes from an article from the Times of Israel. This was written on July 21st. After years of alignment with Shiite Iran and its Arab allies, the Palestinian Hamas group is bidding for Sunni patronage from Saudi Arabia in a dramatic shift to its geostrategic orientation. And then the article goes on to talk about a meeting that took place between the leaders of Hamas and the royal king of Saudi Arabia. The article continues. A high-level Hamas delegation headed by the group's chief, Khaled Mashal, visited Riyadh last Friday to meet with King Salman, Crown Prince Mohammed Nayef, and a host of Saudi officials. The makeup of Hamas's team was noteworthy, as it included Mashal's deputy, Musa Abu Mazouk, the movement's Turkey-based official suspected of guiding recently exposed terrorist cells in the West Bank, as well as the abduction killing of three Israeli teenagers last summer. Arab media rushed to note that it was the first such meeting in over 3 years. The sudden overt rapprochement between revolutionary Hamas and conservative Saudi Arabia is unsurprising given the gradual decline in Hamas's relations with Iran. The article then quoted what one Hamas official wrote on Facebook. This Hamas official wrote, Hamas's compass will remain directed to Jerusalem with the liberation of Palestine the basis of its strategy. Now, this meeting between Hamas leaders and the leaders of Saudi Arabia, it infuriated the mullahs in Tehran. This Times of Israel article continued, Hamas's public appeal for American favor does not please Iran, Hamas's former benefactor. The Islamic Republic would not accept Abu Mazouk's attempt to pacify everyone, indicating that Hamas's shift towards Saudi Arabia means a cut with Iran. And then it cited a headline from an Iranian newspaper. Hamas takes a step toward Riyadh and two steps away from Tehran, read the headline of pro-Hezbollah and by extension pro-Iran Lebanese daily Al-Akhbar on Sunday. Other news outlets in Iran have launched scathing attacks on Hamas, just blasting Hamas for being traitorous toward Iran. There are major divisions in this relationship between Iran and Hamas, and Hamas is clearly improving its relationship with Saudi Arabia, one of the key members of this Psalm 83 alliance. Just a few quotes now from an article, a July 21st article from Reuters. Saudi King Salman's meeting on Friday with Hamas leader Khaled Mashal was part of an effort by Riyadh to shore up Arab unity in the face of a perceived threat from Iran that it believes has become more urgent since last week's nuclear deal. See, a lot of this is happening in the wake of and in response to America giving Iran nuclear weapons and America giving Iran legitimacy in the Middle East and America emboldening Iran politically and helping them financially through the sanctions relief. Saudi Arabia is concerned, and Saudi Arabia is looking around now at the Middle East and even globally, and it's thinking, okay, what can we do? What can we do to counter Iran? And it's looking at Hamas in Gaza, and it sees an opportunity. Saudi Arabia knows if it can pry Hamas away from Iran, then Tehran loses major leverage. It loses one of its key assets in the Middle East. This Reuters article continued, Saudi Arabia, a conservative Sunni Muslim monarchy, has grown more aggressive this year in countering Shiite revolutionary Iran across the region, believing its influence to be the main cause of instability and insecurity in Arab states. And then it quotes an analyst who is close to the Saudi Interior Ministry. It's part of the grand strategy of countering Iranian influence. It's the main issue for Saudi Arabia, and it's more urgent after the nuclear deal. That's what this official, this analyst said. This next quote comes from the head of the Al Arab news channel, which is owned by a Saudi prince. Saudi Arabia is in a confrontational mood against Iran, and it's in the business of gathering as many allies as possible. So if they reach out to Malaysia or reach out to Hamas, it's the same. It's to create, the goal is to create as many allies as possible. This Reuters article also mentions that relations between Turkey and Saudi Arabia are improving, and that Saudi Arabia is reaching out to Turkey, and Saudi Arabia is reaching out to Qatar and some of these other Gulf states. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the Gulf states, Hamas, they're all slowly coming together. Well, I mean, it's not even necessarily slowly. It's happening quite fast. But they're all coming together in a confederate. This is remarkable fulfillment of that prophecy in Psalm 83. This is remarkable fulfillment of that prophecy that Mr. Flurry made 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. Now this week, there was news that Iran responded to Hamas's outreach to Saudi Arabia by cutting off financial aid to the terrorist group. I'll just read a few quotes from Newsweek. This is from July 28th, so just a couple of days ago. Iran has completely cut off its financial aid to the Palestinian militant group Hamas, a senior Hamas official claimed on Monday. Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard has transferred millions of dollars to the Palestinian group's military wing within the last year to finance Gaza's tunnel network and replenish rocket caches used against Israel during last summer's conflict. However, Hamas's chief, who is believed to currently reside in exile in Egypt, has now claimed that Iran's financial backing has dried up. And this is what he said. All assistance has stopped, both civilian aid to the Gaza Strip and military assistance to Hamas. He said that in an interview with Al Jazeera. Iran greatly helped the resistance in Palestine. Without this assistance, it will be hard for us to cope. So this is a real tragedy for Hamas to lose the millions of dollars that it receives every year from Iran. This Hamas official continued, the relations between Hamas and Iran are not advancing in a direction in which the organization Hamas is interested and aren't improving to the degree Hamas wants in order to help the Palestinian issue. Again, just further proof that there is tension, there is disagreement between Hamas and Iran, and that this relationship is fragmenting. It is falling apart, just as the Bible prophesies and just as Mr. Flurry forecast 4 years ago. Okay, I thought we could conclude by just studying this remarkable little prophecy over in Psalm 83. Now, this is very obviously, this prophecy here in Psalm 83 is very obviously about an alliance, or the Bible calls it a confederation of Middle Eastern countries plus Germany. And we'll read that explicitly in a moment. But it's important to note that we haven't ever seen an alliance between exactly these nations before. You can look at Bible history. You can search Bible commentaries, and they'll tell you this, We've never seen this specific alliance between these specific nations before. This is what the Anchor Bible Commentary says about Psalm 83. History transmits no record of the national crisis when the nations enumerated in this psalm formed a league to wipe out Israel. So there's no record in history of these countries coming together to form a league. Lang's commentary says, the 10 nations who are here enumerated as being combined against Israel are never mentioned elsewhere as enemies allied at the same time and for the purpose of annihilating Israel. So we've never seen this prophecy. We've never seen this alliance before. This is a prophecy of the future. This is a prophecy of future events. Now let's just read Psalm 83, verses 1 through 3. So the psalm says, keep not silence, O God, hold not your peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, your enemies make a tumult, and they that hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. So this confederate takes crafty counsel against God's people, and they consult against God's hidden ones. Thy people, there in verse 3, is referring to the nations that God has a special history with, a unique history with. It's talking about the nations of Israel. It's talking about the nation, the modern-day nations that are the descendants of the sons of Jacob. And it's talking specifically about the birthright nations, Ephraim and Manasseh, or Britain and America. This alliance, this confederation, this Psalm 83 alliance exists to oppose and to destroy Ephraim and Manasseh. And if you study other Bible prophecies, if you study Hosea 5, for example, you'll see that the Jewish state is also destroyed at the same time that Ephraim and America are destroyed. When it says thy people here in Psalm 83, it's talking about America, Britain, and the Jewish state. It's saying that this alliance exists to destroy these nations. The Psalm 83 alliance comes together to oppose and to destroy Britain and America and the Jewish state. Notice too, this alliance also consults against God's hidden ones. Other translations says it consults against God's sheltered ones. This is talking about God's church. They're right there in the middle of this prophecy. Now, notice verse 4. Why does this confederation exist? Verse 4, they have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. See, this Psalm 83 Alliance of Nations is intensely anti-American. Its main goal is to destroy the nations of Israel. This Psalm 83 alliance hates the Jewish state. Look at verse 5. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are a confederate against thee. Who consults against Israel now? Who is this Psalm 83? Can we know? Can we know which nations will comprise this Psalm 83 confederate? Well, God spells it out explicitly here in verses 6 through 8. Look. The tabernacles of Eden and the Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagarenes, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre, Asher also is joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot. God lists explicitly the nations that comprise this Psalm 83 confederate. Who are the modern-day descendants of these people mentioned here in verses 6 through 8? You can find the answer if you study Bible commentaries, if you study ancient maps, if you study the Bible. You can find the answer. And we've done all of that legwork for you. And I can tell you, and you can check this, but we can identify the modern-day descendants of those nations. Edom, the modern-day descendant of Edom, is Turkey. The Ishmaelites today are Saudi Arabia. Moab and Ammon is Jordan. The Hagarenes can be found in Syria. The Philistines, anciently, inhabited the region of southern Israel over to the border, over to the coastline. The Philistines inhabited the region that today we call Gaza. Gebal is Lebanon. Tyre is the area of southern Lebanon today, and Asher, as we've shown and proved repeatedly over the past 70 years, Asher is referring to Germany. Now, these are the Sunni Arab nations of the Middle East. These are nations in the Middle East that we in the West like to refer to as moderate or Western friendly. But they're anything but moderate in their hatred of America and Britain and the Jewish state. And really, it's a massive misnomer that people use far too often, calling these nations moderate. Look at verses 3 and 4. This Confederate, the Psalm 83 alliance, it exists to oppose and destroy Israel. It's easy to think because these nations combine or they come together to counter Iran and ISIS, it's easy to think that they are on our side. It's easy to believe that they're moderate, that they're friendly, but they're not. The Psalm 83 is not pro-Western. It's not pro-American. It's not pro-Israel. The nations of Psalm 83 are united in their hatred for Israel. This is a frightening alliance. And we should be concerned not just about Iran. We should be concerned not just about ISIS. But we should be concerned also about this Psalm 83 alliance and the fact that it's coming together. I thought I would just conclude by reading some quotes from that Trumpet article that Mr. Flurry wrote in September 2012. You can read this article online at thetrumpet.com. The title is How the Syria Crisis Will End. And here's what Mr. Flurry wrote. These verses foretell a massive shift in alliances among the nations of the Middle East. Events are about to stagger the imagination of many authorities in this world. And God prophesied it all thousands of years ago. Should we believe in the Old Testament? We should if we want to understand end-time Bible prophecy. The Psalms is the only book in the Bible that contains this prophecy. Without Psalm 83, there would be no way to understand these particular events until well after they had snapped into place. This is a most exciting and wonderful prophecy, yet the world understands almost nothing about it. People should understand because this message has been publicized for them to see for about 70 years by the Trumpet and by Herbert W. Armstrong. See, this is an exciting prophecy. This is a dramatic prophecy. Where else can you read about Hamas and Iran fracturing, divorcing, and Hamas siding with Saudi Arabia? Where else can you read about that 3, 4, 5, 6 years before it happens? This work is unique. The message you're hearing on the Trumpet Daily Radio program every day and the Key of David and the message you read in the Trumpet, it's unique. It's unique. It's not ordinary, and you can't just get it from anywhere else. This prophecy here in Psalm 83, it is important, and it is exciting, and it is a prophecy that's going to continue to be fulfilled right before our eyes over the next few weeks and months. Okay, we'll go ahead and leave it there for today. Thanks for joining me. And I'll see you next time.
prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The king of the south is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the literature tab to select your free booklet.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. What if someone writes something down, an event, recorded in a book, before it actually happened? And then many years later, perhaps centuries after it was written about, that event actually happens. And what if many other prophesied events happened exactly as they were described, in advance, again and again and again? We're not talking about a lucky guess here, not a coincidence, not a one hit among a thousand misses. We're talking about a forecast about the future that turns out to be completely true every single time. That's what you find in the Holy Bible. About one-third of it is prophecy. A great deal of it has already been fulfilled. On the program today, we're going to look at prophecy, not just any prophecy, Bible prophecy. The Bible has had billions of believers and adherents. It's been subjected to close examination for millennia. It's largely misunderstood today, that's true. But this book has withstood the test of time better than any other book, especially any other book that claims to predict the future. Bible prophecy is a huge subject, especially when you factor in all the different interpretations and misinterpretations that are floating around. So today we're going to simplify things. We're going to take one of the main subjects of the Bible, the history and the prophecy of the nation of Israel. Almost every last prophecy in this book, that is the Bible, is connected in some way to the nation that descended from Abraham, the nation known as Israel. A lot of this that we'll cover here today is discussed in Herbert Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, and we'll give you the information today that you need to secure your own free copy of this wonderful book. 6 million copies of this have been distributed around the world. 6 million! This is Mr. Armstrong's most popular work, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. And as I say, we're drawing a lot of the material for today's program right from this book. Now, most people are familiar with the term the 12 tribes of Israel. Those are the tribes that descended from Abraham's grandson, Jacob. And Jacob's 12 sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, all of these sons, their offspring developed into large families and then eventually large tribes that went on to become nations. That's what your Bible said would happen back in the book of Genesis. And as you study Mr. Armstrong's book, of course, you can learn about all of this history and prophecy, as I say. But going back to the history, anciently, when the Israelites arrived in the Promised Land, led there by Joshua, he divided them up into their respective tribes. He assigned them territory or land, all of the tribes except for Levi. whose inheritance, the Bible says, was the priesthood or the work that they had to minister unto Israel. And then you also had Joseph that had split into the two tribes, his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. So there were 13 tribes. 12 of them had their own territory assigned to them. You can see this by just looking into the back of a good Bible that has maps of where those 12 tribes were situated. And as I say, except for the tribe of Levi, they mostly kept to themselves these tribes, but they were all affiliated together, similar to how the states are connected together in the United States. Different states, but one nation. Different tribes, but one nation. The nation of Israel. Now, Israel anciently reached the height of its power under the days of King David and his son Solomon. It really reached the apex during Solomon's reign, his kingly dynasty. And along the way, of course, God told David that he would establish his royal line forever. That's a separate study that happens to also be discussed in Mr. Armstrong's book. But today we're going to focus more on some critical history. If you want to start turning over to 1 Kings in chapter 11, please do go and get your Bible so that you can read along and learn what so many, even in the world of traditional Christian religion, really know nothing about. And it all comes right out of your own Bible. This is history that's vitally important because it serves as the key that unlocks Bible prophecy. You have to understand this history. So God established this covenant with David, and he said in the Bible that if your offspring, if your sons don't obey me, that I'll punish them. And with respect to Solomon, because of his many sins and problems, he told Solomon, I will surely rend the kingdom from you. I'll take the kingdom from you. Let's notice 1 Kings 11, and we'll start in verse 11. It says, Wherefore the Lord said unto Solomon, For as much as this is done of you, and you have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely rend the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. That's what God promised. That's what God prophesied. And yet, along with this, he also promised to preserve one small part of Israel or one tribe for David's sake. Notice verse 13. Howbeit, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but will give one tribe to your son for David, my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. And so Solomon dies about 926 BC, and the people, the Israelites of these tribes, begged his son Rehoboam to relieve some of the oppressive taxes that Solomon had put on the people. And then carrying on, we're just going to be able to hit some of the high spots here. But in chapter 12 and verse 4, here's the people saying, Your father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore, make you the grievous service of your father and his heavy yoke, which he put upon us, lighter, and we will serve you. If you lighten this load, if you lighten this burden, then we'll support you, we'll serve you, we'll continue along with you. And notice Rehoboam's disdainful reply. This is down in verse 11. It says, And now, whereas my father did laid you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father has chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So he put it on heavier. He added to their burden. He oppressed them even more. And as the history goes on and discusses, this prompted 10 of those tribes to break away, to secede, to go and install their own leader in the north. They rebelled against Rehoboam. They rebelled against the throne of David. They rebelled against Jerusalem. Down in verse 20, it says, And it came to pass, when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, and they sent and called him unto the congregation and made him king over all Israel. There was none that followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah only. And so, just as God had prophesied, just as God had warned Solomon, because of your sins, I'm going to rend the kingdom from you. And this is what God did do. And yet he preserved one tribe for David's sake to make sure that that throne continued and that there would be no break in this Davidic line. And so Judah, it says there, remained with Rehoboam. Now you can put some other scriptures together and see how that Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, stayed with Judah and most of the tribe of Levi. So for the most part, that southern nation, as it became, that southern nation was composed of Judah and Benjamin and Levi. Let's continue in verse 24. It says, "Thus says the Lord, you shall not go up nor fight against your brethren, the children of Israel. Return every man to his house, for this thing is from me." This is God talking to Rehoboam, saying Rehoboam went up and he was going to forcibly keep the tribes together, preserve the unity in Israel. And yet God told him, no, this is from me. This is what I said that I would do when Solomon rebelled. And so let them go. It says, "They hearkened therefore to the word of the Lord and returned to depart according to the word of the Lord." So before this happened, before Israel separated into these two nations, the Jews or the tribe of Judah, they were considered Israelites. All of them were considered Israelites, just like everyone from a different state in the United States would be considered an American. They were all together under that Israelite banner. But once this happened, and again, this is something that's largely overlooked in the world of religion, Christian religion. Once this happened, this is where so many Bible scholars and theologians get off track. They don't realize that after this happened, the Jews and those together with them were primarily of the tribe of Judah, or called Judah, and all those that left were then the Israelites. So you had Israel in the north, the bulk of the people, the 10 tribes, and then you had the nation of Judah in the south. So from this point forward in the Bible narrative, you have two separate nations, and they dwelt in two separate areas, and they had different kings. I mean, they were totally different, and yet they were all Israelites, or they descended from those 12 tribes coming from Jacob. But now they're two nations. So we'll jump forward in the story and we'll look at chapter 14. This is 1 Kings 14. And down in verse 30, it says, "And there was war between Rehoboam," that's the one that stayed in Judah or with Jerusalem, with the throne of David. "There was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam," or Israel, "all their days." And so for the duration of these two monarchs, their rule, they fought against one another. The Israelites fought against the people from Judah. They were at war with one another. Now, through it all, just to give a generalization of some of this history, as you probably know, God sent prophets to these two nations, to these two peoples. He sent prophets to Israel. He sent prophets to Judah to warn them, to plead with them, because they were getting off into rebellion, particularly in the north, as there's not one righteous king discussed in the books of Kings and Chronicles. Judah was a little bit different. They had a lot of evil kings too, but there were five or six that were righteous, like Josiah, Hezekiah, and so on. In the north, it was different, and God sent prophet after prophet after prophet to warn them, to turn them, to tell them, "You've got to turn back to me, or you're going to go into captivity. I'll root you right out of this land. I'll send you off into captivity." And God, of course, eventually did do that with the tribes of Israel, rooting them out of the land and taking them into Assyrian captivity. Chapter 15 of 2 Kings, and we'll look at verse 19. It says, "And Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land." Now, Pul in biblical history here is the same as Tiglath-Pileser III, who ruled in Assyria from 745 to 727 BC. So just to summarize some of the history here, Menahem, he was the king of Israel at the time. He submitted to this aggression that was coming from Assyria, paid tribute to Pul or to Tiglath-Pileser III, taxes and so on, and the people of Israel were infuriated by this. They didn't want to pay tribute to this Assyrian king. and many of them were angry about this. And so after Menahem's rule, then his son comes to power, but there was an Israelite general by the name of Pekah who assassinated the son and who assumed control of the throne himself and resisted against the king of Assyria. And so along the way, he forms this alliance with Rezin in Damascus to try to stand against this Assyrian empire. Now, all the while, you had the king down in Judah, King Ahaz, who didn't want any part of this alliance, who didn't want to support what the Israelites were doing. So we jump forward in the story to chapter 16. This is verse 5. Verse 5, it says, "Then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to war, and they besieged Ahaz, but could not overcome him." So here's the case where, as I say, Ahaz wanted no part of it. And so Pekah, together with this alliance with Rezin, they come against Jerusalem. And so they're now fighting Judah, the Israelites, fighting against the Jews, as it goes on and says in verse 6. "At that time, Rezin, king of Syria, recovered Elath to Syria and drove the Jews from Elath. And the Syrians came to Elath and dwelt there unto this day." They couldn't quite take Jerusalem, but they did drive the Jews, as it says there, out of Elath. Now, most people just read over this seemingly unimportant skirmish between Judah and Israel without understanding the real significance. And this is hugely significant. This is the first time, this verse here in 2 Kings 16, the first time the word Jews is mentioned in the Bible, and you find that Jews are fighting Israelites. Now, if I were to tell you today that the Jews are fighting the Israelites or fighting against Israel, it wouldn't make sense to you because you would just automatically assume that, well, these are Jews in the little nation of Israel in the Middle East, and how could they be fighting against themselves? These were two separate peoples, two separate nations by this point. Now, you tell this history to the average churchgoer, and they have no idea. They just assume that Jew and Israelite is synonymous. It is true that Jews are Israelites, but what most people don't realize or understand is there's a lot of other tribes of Israel that have gone lost, that lost their identity, and that's really the central point of this book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This is what Mr. Armstrong discusses at length, this history. Where are those people today? When we come back from the break, we'll just look at a little bit more of this history and then wrap things up with what Jesus said in the New Testament to his own disciples about where that they should go.
Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. Simply follow the information on your screen and request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
Let's continue our study in 2 Kings 17. Before the break, we talked about Tiglath-Pileser, this ruler in Assyria. He was succeeded by Shalmaneser V, and the king in Israel at that time, Hoshea, he refused to pay tribute to Shalmaneser, and that led ultimately to Israel's demise. Picking it up in 2 Kings 17 and verse 18, it says, Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. And so after Shalmaneser, you had the rule of Sargon II, and he started this process of removing Israelites by the tens of thousands out of their land, out of their home, and carting them off into Assyrian captivity. That's the history. That's what happened anciently. And many scholars would be aware of this. But what most overlook is the fact that Judah's history continued. The southern nation, it continued for another century, almost a century and a half. 130 years And you can see that history brought out in the books of 1 and 2 Kings. 2 Kings 23, we'll move forward now a few chapters in the story to verse 27, where God warns, I will remove Judah also out of my sight, as I have removed Israel, and will cast off this city, Jerusalem, which I have chosen. Now, we've talked about how these two, once they separated in the days of Jeroboam and Rehoboam, they became two separate nations, two separate monarchies, two separate regions. And even when they went into captivity, they went in two separate directions. One went into Assyrian captivity and the other went into the Babylonian captivity. This is all, again, right out of the Old Testament. By the time of Judah's captivity, you're probably familiar with Nebuchadnezzar and the many prophets that came along to warn Judah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the like. I mean, there were many. Judah and Israel, though, all throughout were different nations heading in different directions. Israel was pretty much amalgamated into the Assyrian Empire. Judah, however, once they were taken captive into Babylon, they were there, but God allowed for some of them, to a small band of Jews, to return back to Jerusalem to rebuild the city walls, to build the second temple. Israel never returned. Israel lost its identity. Again, you can look into Ezra chapter 1 and chapter 2 and see how that after 70 years of captivity, they came back, this small band of Jews, the people from Judah. And this, as I said earlier, is where so many scholars and theologians and historians fail to understand. They fail to understand the significance of this history, and therefore they lose sight of so many significant prophecies. They don't have the key to unlock Bible prophecy. They don't understand Israel's identity. It was just from the tribe of Judah that returned. Now you look at Israel today, as I said, people just kind of associate that with Jews alone. But even the name that was chosen for the little state in the Middle East, I mean, that was selected in 1948. That's basically a modern phenomenon, the name of that little nation. And in fact, the Jews, as they were assembling together in the 1940s to create that state with the support of the United States and Britain, the United Nations, of course, they actually considered other names like Judah, like Zion, and they opted for Israel. And that's only helped to continue to confuse people, really. It's not that the Jews aren't Israelites, they are. But not all Israelites are Jews. That's what Mr. Armstrong points out in the United States and Britain in prophecy. Let's just conclude today over in Matthew chapter 10. We'll switch now to the New Testament. And as you turn over there, I'll just go through a quote here with you quickly from Werner Keller's book, The Bible as History. Notice what he says. He says, the people of the northern kingdom and their kings with them disappeared, were absorbed into the population of these foreign lands, and never emerged again in history. All investigation into what became of the 10 tribes who had their home there has so far come to nothing. Now, he understands enough to know that they went in separate directions. But what he assumes there is the larger of the two, I mean, the 10 tribes that were taken into captivity. Judah, remember, went into Babylon. But what he brings out there is that the 10 tribes evidently just kind of blended in with their captors and then disappeared. And they fell off the face of the earth, I guess. Or at least he's saying, we don't know where they are. But the thing you'll see right here from Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew, is Jesus Christ knew where they were and in fact told his disciples, this is where I want you to go. He directed them toward the Israelites, not the Jews that were living there in Palestine. Many of the first converts in the church were Jews, as you well know. Notice what it says here. And in Matthew 10, I read this in a program recently, discussing another subject. But verse 5, it says, these 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go not into the way of the Gentiles. That's what Paul would do eventually. Paul was sent to those Gentile peoples in and around the Mediterranean region. It says, go not into the way of the Gentiles and into any city of the Samaritans, enter you not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That's referring to those 10 tribes. There was the house of Israel and there was the house of Judah. And Christ here says, go to that house of Israel. Now, this was 800 years, this statement from Christ. This was 800 years after Israel went into captivity, after the Assyrians carted them off, took them out of their homeland, and carried them off. Where do they go? Well, Christ does draw attention to the fact that, as far as the world is concerned, they did become lost, just like that quote brought out that I read to you. They lost track of them. In fact, the Israelites themselves lost track of their identity, of their heritage. And you can go back from the very beginning and look at what Jeroboam instituted and see why, that they completely forgot. But the point I'm trying to help you see here is that Jesus knew, though they lost their own identity, Jesus knew where they went and in fact told his disciples to go and to preach to them. Now, the question I'll leave you with before we conclude is, where did those Israelites go? That's what you can find out in this wonderful book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. So stay tuned and write down the information that you need to get your own free copy. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.